Welcome to the 13th episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. It is Wednesday the 22nd of May, and in this episode we're going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also talk about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this week is Laura.
Hello.
How are you, Laura?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good, good. Sadly, neither Alan nor Mark can be here this week, but we do have two excellent replacements. Laura Tchaikovsky.
Hello, how are you doing?
And Andy Piper.
Hi there.
Both previous guest presenters on the Ubuntu UK podcast, but joining us for this season for the first time. Thank you for coming along, folks.
Thanks.
Glad to
much.
Be here.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to finding out your views on the news that has happened in the recent days and weeks. Is that rhyme?
Ish. Shall we get on with the show?
Harsh.
The best.
Okay.
And it's time for some news. So the Ubuntu kernel team is going to be supporting the 3.8 version of the Linux kernel until August 2014.
That's very generous of them. What's made them do a silly thing like that?
I'm not quite sure. I think that's when something goes out of support. 13.04 goes out of support.
Yes.
But it's being used somewhere else.
It's being used somewhere else.
I was hoping somebody else had read this as well.
Well, basically, the Ubuntu kernel team have taken on the burden of supporting the mainline Linux kernel, as it stands, the proper Linus Torvalds anointed kernel, because that version, 3.8, has been used in Raring.
Yes.
And therefore will have to be supported for 18 months anyway. So rather than just supporting it within Ubuntu, they've said, well, we'll support it in the main Linux kernel tree.
That's kind of cool.
I missed that part of it. Wow.
Well, that's kind of the point of the story, really.
That's why it's a more interesting story than I thought.
Yes, this is where it gets interesting.
Pay attention, people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do your homework. So Greg Crower Hartman, who's supposed to be maintaining it, has sort of said that he can't be bothered anymore. He's going to go off to do something else. So Canonical have stepped up to the plate, listening to the naysayers who say that Canonical don't contribute enough to the Linux kernel, and they're actually going to take on maintenance of the 3.8 series kernel.
So, wow.
Because it's not an active branch, it'll be security and bug and major bug fixes rather than significant developments. But it's still good.
And do we have an applause sound effect or something to play in at this point? Or kind of some kind of hip hip hooray? Oh, look at that. Kind of. Hooray!
You have to add your own applause, I'm afraid, Andy. But yeah, so that's quite interesting that they're stepping up to the plate to do that. And of course, other distributions will be able to take their work in the 3.8 kernel and reuse it should they wish.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good news. So the International Space Station is migrating its laptops from Windows to Linux. Yay!
That's so cool.
But will they be playing Space Oddity like Commander Hadfield did?
Probably.
It only took an incident back in 2008 when the space station got infected with a Windows virus to actually make them change. So I suggest we go everywhere and actually just get USBs and infect lots of things.
So what were they running? What were they running on the International Space Station? This thing that is in orbit.
Windows XP.
Windows XP. How did they get updates?
Slowly.
Why bother updating? It's the most stable Windows ever.
An astronaut took an infected USB stick up and plugged it in. It just seems such like a mundane thing to do on the International Space Station.
Well, presumably that's how they were getting the updates.
Yeah.
It was via USB stick in somebody's spacesuit pocket.
So they're going to be moving to Debian.
Yes.
In fact, so not the Debian version that's just been released, but the previous stable one, right?
Debian 6.
Which is Squeeze, I think.
Or is it Wheezy?
No, Wheezy's a brand new one, which is 7.
Oh, okay. Oh.
I think that's the same one that the Raspberry Pi distribution is based on at the moment, Wheezy.
Cool.
Okay.
Just, side point.
Excellent. So anybody have any idea how many computers they have up there?
They've got loads. I think I read this story that they've got like 20 or 30. I mean, they've only got like 5 or 6 people on the station, but they've got like 20 or 30 different computers, and they've got like laptops floating around for them to just pick up and use whichever module they're in. So
literally floating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brings a new meaning to hot desking.
Excellent.
That was in a different story than the one we've got linked here, but I'm sure I read that they've got a surprisingly large number of machines up there. Well,
cool.
I suppose it's not that surprising, since you probably need a fair amount of technology to keep it in the sky.
In the air.
Well, and they do scientific research and things like that, don't
absolutely.
They? So you need laptops and stuff to drive all that. I imagine the space station is run by something more powerful than a Raspberry Pi, but I might be wrong. And the shuttle was run off effectively a less powerful thing than a desktop calculator.
Yeah, and if you go all the way back to the original space program, I mean, look at the machines that IBM used to help NASA back then. They were nothing compared to today's standards, so it's possible, as long as you program it effectively.
Absolutely.
And not run Windows.
Yeah. Try and avoid Windows XP on your next space mission. So, kernel versions 2.6.37 or 37 to 3.8.9 have been found to be vulnerable to a local exploit, allowing access to almost any area of memory. So, interesting, we were talking about kernel version 3.8 continuing to be maintained by the Canonical team. So the bug itself was fixed in April, but unfortunately it was left in some of the older versions. And the Ubuntu kernel team have now released fixes for 12.04, 12.10, and 13.04.
Cool. So if there are updates pending on your system, it's probably worthwhile doing them.
Let's advise getting those updates running, because, you don't want kernel bugs. They're generally not good.
Yeah, so a local exploit means that a user on your system could effectively get root access and then do anything to your system, I guess?
That's the kind of thing that they're talking about. Interestingly, from a Linux kind of community perspective, the Red Hat kernels were not affected, because they do their own patches. As they build them, and I think Debian are still working on a fix. They may have released it by now, but as we go to air. But there's been some nasty stuff happening there.
So maybe the space station using Debian was not the best choice. They should have used Red Hat. But I won't be the one to suggest that to them. Excellent. Okay, so Yahoo have purchased the photo blogging site Tumblr for $1.1 billion. So the Tumblr...
That's what we normally call an Instagram in the business, I think.
Tumblr users are absolutely happy and ecstatic about this.
Not so much, but I think... I wasn't particularly bothered. And there's been a lot of stuff saying, Tumblr's the new GeoCities, which, of course, Yahoo also bought. I actually noticed that the next day, after the big thing on Monday and over the weekend, it was all rumoured that Yahoo also then updated Flickr, and that also caused lots of upset in the various communities. And Flickr, as well as Tumblr, is a very community-driven and oriented site. So interesting stuff going on from Yahoo at the moment.
Well, there were quite a lot of people expressing surprise that Yahoo still had $1.1 billion to spend on Tumblr.
I didn't even realise it was that active still, to be honest. I mean...
What, Yahoo or Tumblr?
Yahoo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, even when you see people's addresses on LinkedIn or other places, you kind of wonder... Really? Is that a Yahoo account? It's a bit dubious. It's like a Hotmail account, really.
AOL.
Yeah.
CompuServe.
It is quite retro, but as you say, you think of it as the early days of the web. You know, it was a great search engine or search directory. They had directories of websites. Do you remember that?
Yes.
From 10 plus 15 maybe years ago, but maybe less these days, where they just haven't got the... market integration, is that a buzzword to use in this?
It's not just that. Google does. Once upon a time, the web relied on users to help to categorize where all the sites were. And as you say, Yahoo is one of those portals where you could go in and submit URLs and say, this belongs to this particular category, food, Mexican or something, Whereas now the search and spidering technology is much more effective, that you don't necessarily need quite so much curation. The algorithms have become self-aware, and Skynet is nearly upon us. It's really interesting to see what Marissa Meyer's new goals are for Yahoo now that she's kind of redirecting it. And they've released a lot of nice new mobile apps in the last few months, started to integrate things like their new weather app uses pictures from Flickr of the city you're in, or whatever city that it's describing.
Cool.
I'm not quite sure they've got a... Not sure that they've publicly expressed the vision yet, but certainly this is a really interesting building block, and the idea that lots of young people in particular will use the Tumblr dashboard and gravitate towards Tumblr clearly kind of shows where she's aiming to pick up eyeballs and views. Interesting. I'm a WordPress user, and Matt Mullenweg, the inventor of WordPress and the guy that runs Automattic, which is the company that looks after WordPress, wrote a blog post over the weekend before this had even been officially confirmed. I think over the weekend it was pretty clear that the deal was done, and commented that, you know, normally they have maybe 400 to 600 posts per hour imported from the Tumblr blogs.
Wow.
And they'd gone up to a peak of 72,000 an hour. This is posts, not blogs as a whole, right? So, you know, they obviously have to individually grab posts and import them.
But, I mean, Yahoo are, I guess, a safe pair of hands. They're not an uninspiring, necessarily, pair of hands.
There was a great story I read, which was called What Happens After Your Company is Taken Over by Yahoo.
Really?
Which was, you know, it starts off with everybody, both sides, pat each other on the back and say, yes, we really share the vision of each other, and this is all awesome. And within 2 years, when the golden handcuffs come off, the founders have left and everything's kind of slowed to a halt. So... again, this was old Yahoo, perhaps. I mean, particularly this was describing things like, who remembers sites like Upcoming and Fire Eagle? No, it wasn't. Was it Fire Eagle? One of those. I can't remember. There was some location thing, and they also bought. Then obviously they bought Flickr as their kind of major one.
Yeah.
And you know, the founders from Flickr moved on eventually, and. Now they are revamping it, but it's taken them a long time.
Yeah,
so do you think this will be the kiss of death for it?
Who knows?
I mean, they haven't bought it to shut it down. Right, and they Facebook.
Both sides patted each other on the back and said, we're going to remain independent and the team stays the same and we're not turning purple. And I really liked, there were a couple of things in David, I think David Karp, I think is the name of the guy that invented Tumblr, or one of the guys, and he posted that both companies have a punctuation mark in their name, so we're a great match.
That's synergy there.
Yes.
I know these things.
I saw a tweet last night from someone called Benedict Evans saying, Yahoo users are like the people who click on banner ads. We know they must exist, but we've never met one.
Well, I particularly like that this deal was announced using an animated GIF.
Yeah.
Which... It's the first time I've ever seen a deal announced like that.
So are we officially calling them GIFs, are we? Not GIFs.
I've always called them GIFs.
Yeah, always been a GIF.
We've all heard that today, have we? The stuff about how you pronounce the word GIF. The original creator insists that they should be called GIFs.
Really?
Does he?
Really?
Yes.
We should have spelled it with a J.
I woke up to a Twitter storm of indignation that the inventor was wrong.
And the correct
pronunciation was GIF.
I mean, we all know that GIF's what you clean the hob with.
Well, and that's spelled with a J.
This was, or in fact, C. People were saying that, you know, this was a European rebrand, would be SIF instead. Yeah. So,
absolutely. Right. Laura.
The H has been investigating reports. The H?
It's a website.
The H Online.
The H Online.
Oh.
That's where Fab was.
I've completely missed that. Oh, yeah, okay.
That place.
I didn't know that's what it's called. Okay, it's been investigating reports that links posted in Skype chats have been accessed by Microsoft after they are sent. I did see the story, actually.
Yeah, so you're chatting on Skype chat to somebody, you paste a link in it, which you have to use now they've shut down MSN.
And Fab checks out what's in there.
No, not Fab. Fab doesn't work from... Oh. Fab's not there clicking on every link that comes through on Skype chat. His job is possibly more fulfilling than that. No, basically, if you're chatting on Skype to somebody and you paste a link into them...
And it has to be an HTTPS link, I believe.
Yes.
Oh, an extra secure one.
Yes.
So even if it's an internal URL or something like that...
It contains session information and cookie information, you know, in the, all stuff appended to the URL, which is kind of session-related.
Yeah, some bot at Microsoft will follow that link. We'll go, oh, there's a link I'm going to follow, and let's see what's at the end of it. And if it has got the session information that Andy was talking about in the URL, it may even be able to get into a protected system.
If it's a badly written protected system, but yes.
Yes, I agree. But it's not beyond the realms of possibility. It's not actually getting any content from the page. It's doing what they call a head request, which is getting server information back and getting a response from the web server that's serving the web page.
And they had a reason for why they did this.
They want to own all your data.
No, they had a reason that sort of excused it, even whether or not people are happy with that. It was to do with, I don't know, dodgy stuff going over the servers and checking that it wasn't or something.
Well, some of the speculation is that it's to do with the smart screen filter that's built into Internet Explorer, which is a phishing detection thing.
Yeah.
So they're checking out these websites to see if it's dodgy. Quite how you can do
that. For the users of Internet Explorer?
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
That minority.
And how you can do that if you're not actually getting the page content back, because the head request doesn't tell you anything particularly useful. But nobody really knows, and nobody's particularly made a clear statement, as far as we're aware yet, about what that's all about.
Probably find out it was some intern somewhere.
Well, like a lot of these things, it's often something that was was done with the best intentions, but wasn't necessarily executed in the best way.
Mm.
But yes, so there we go.
Execute them. Sorry.
That's fine, and that's the end of the news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that enthralls, exasperates, or elevates you, tweet at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. Please do get in touch. I mean it. Just one message, just to know there's someone out there who cares.
So, welcome to the community news. Alejandra, the head of the web design for Ubuntu, has blogged about the recent work to ensure Ubuntu.com website has access to all areas of the project, just including their projects and the products, not just community.
Yes, so there's been a whole heap of work about rebranding the Ubuntu website at the moment. Is this kind of some of the reasons behind it and some of the work that's gone into it?
Yeah, so I think she was talking about the reasons why it actually happened, the plan for the future, because I know there was a lot of skepticism as why the link for community was actually removed off the Ubuntu.com. Mm. And she actually explained how the decision was made, what they actually did to make the change. So even as far as reaching out to myself, to poke members of the Ubuntu UK team for hands-on user testing, for them to come into Canonical offices, she explained all of that, which wasn't possibly clear in other posts that were made, because members of the community, I think, were kind of not believing what Canonical were saying, but kind of jumping to the Canonical have done something wrong, uproar kind of thing. And
right.
The blog post does kind of explain it an awful lot better. And even following on from last week, when we had virtual UDS, the design team took part in it and good discussions were had.
She says that there are two phases to the development of the site. So the first one is restructuring and updating Ubuntu.com to reflect the kind of the expanded scope of what Ubuntu is trying to do. So not just desktop and server, but all the tablet and phone and all the other devices that we might see coming along as well. So that's phase one, which has happened. And phase two, which is in progress now, is about adding the global navigation to all the key sites that are run under Ubuntu.com. So things like the wiki and I guess the forums and all the other sort of subdomains and things, so that they all have a consistent navigation, which obviously is a lot more work than just one system, because it's not just a website.
No, I suppose it can't all just be done in one go. I mean,
you
need to plan and think out, and it obviously has to be done in sections, and I suppose that's where some of the issue and the confusion actually happened.
Yeah.
And because Alan's not here, I thought I'd just insert a little snarky comment that, of course, phase three will be to remove all references to GNU and Linux from the website as well. I'm joking. That won't happen.
Of course it won't happen. We know that.
Okay, so another piece of community news. Canonical and Dell are running a competition to win a very shiny and lovely Dell XPS 13 Ubuntu Edition Ultrabook, which is their lovely developer edition, super thin Dell laptop.
Okay, sounds great. I'd like to enter. What do I have to do?
How do you do it?
So, if you are traveling in the near future to a couple of countries, Russia or Ukraine, then you just need to take a photo of one of the billboards in those countries advertising Ubuntu.
Okay.
So it's open to everyone.
Who lives in Russia or Ukraine, or is visiting there for business purposes, or even maybe pleasure.
And also, I mean, there's some pictures of the posters on billboards in the announcement on frigidubuntu.com.
Yep.
There are other prizes other than the laptop. There are also a bundle of articles from the Ubuntu store, including the much prized Ubuntu Messenger bag.
Okay.
The third prize being the 100 gigabyte Ubuntu One storage and music streaming for a year.
Oh, that's not
nice,
too bad.
Prizes. Yeah.
I particularly want the laptop. But it's probably not worth the plane flight there to Russia.
Buy one.
Those laptops are really nice. I want one.
Okay, fair enough. Well, to be honest, it probably is cheaper to buy one than to fly to Russia or Ukraine, take a prize-winning photograph of a billboard.
I don't know what you're talking about, Tony. I'm going to do it tomorrow.
Okay. Right. Okay. Well, make sure you come back in time for next week's show, and you can tell us all about it and how it went. Brainstorm, Ubuntu Brainstorm, which we talked about in our first ever episode.
Ever first episode.
Back in season one, episode one, we talked about this new fantastic thing called Ubuntu Brainstorm, which is going to allow people to submit really good ideas that would get voted up and marked popular, and they would then maybe appear in an Ubuntu desktop near you at some point, sometime in the future.
Well, at the time, desktop, but of course, these days, it could be any kind of device.
That was a future we daren't even envisage back in those those dim and distant days. But it's being shut down now.
So what happens instead?
So nobody has any say or gets to put forward any ideas ever again.
you are trolling nicely this evening, aren't you, Andy?
Just, you know, Alan's not here to get sensitive and defend himself. So,
but I am.
Yeah. You're sitting next to Laura.
You still have a canonical employee in the room.
Yeah, I'm just out of arm's reach of her at the moment.
So, yeah, basically, there isn't really a great place for ideas to go, but Ubuntu Brainstorm wasn't working in its current form, which is why they've shut it down.
Okay.
There were not enough people to police it. There were not enough people to mark duplicate ideas and to merge them. I think I remember Alan doing some of that admin back in the early days anyway, and obviously, you know, a long time has moved in the last 5 years, and people have moved on and lost interest. Plus, ideas weren't getting then absorbed into the Ubuntu development plan. The direction of Ubuntu's changed so much recently that it's kind of, rightly or wrongly, it is much more centrally led in terms of the direction of the project, I think, than it perhaps it was 5 years ago. So all things must pass, but not this podcast. We carry on. Ubuntu
Six
Brainstorm
years.
Is no more.
So the internet's John R. Bacon has published a roundup of what happened at the recent UDS.
Okay. What did happen at the recent UDS?
Laura, were you involved with UDS?
I managed to catch up with one or two sessions. It was very interesting having it online. They increased the length of the virtual UDS from 2 days to 3 days and increased the length of hours that it actually ran. So I think more people got to get involved. Quite a lot of discussions were had, so including the Ubuntu.com community link was discussed, and lots of plans were made for the coming cycle.
Yeah. Were you involved in any of the women's Ubuntu thing?
No, unfortunately, Liz and Sherry and a few others were there, but just other commitments meant I couldn't make it. But there does seem the benefit for not actually for missing them means you can actually still catch up with them online because they're all recorded.
Ah, brilliant.
Well, one of the things that may pique people's interest is that there was interest expressed at a UDS about moving to Chromium as the default browser on Ubuntu. To be honest, personally, I use Chromium as my default browser anyway.
So one of the things I noticed, I just upgraded to Raring, and I started playing around with, and I hadn't played, I know this feature's been there for a while, with the web apps that you can install into Unity, and I don't think that works with Chromium, does it? Is it dependent on a Firefox feature?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure how the web apps work. I think they're sandboxed, aren't they?
They pop up when you go to a page in Firefox, which is a default, then it's right. And it's one of the ones that features it. It says, would you like to install this app? And it pops up into Unity. But I haven't seen it working with Chromium and Chrome. So I'm wondering if that move would entail a load of additional rework on those other things. But I don't know.
Okay. One of the things that Jono mentions is that they're trying to get a preview of Ubuntu 8, which is the Phablet UI, running on Mir as an optional thing going on there. So it'll be interesting to see the tablet work kind of taking the next step. There are quite a lot of community discussions as well. Jono likes to write about those because I guess that's his job. They were talking about approving loco teams. So the idea is that... not approving loco teams. Sorry, so there will not be approved loco teams anymore.
No.
That's correct.
Correct. Right. There will be teams, and we've changed the name because I'm on the local council, and that was something that we worked on for the last cycle. We just have a blog post actually come out with it tomorrow at some point in time. They're all going to be loco teams, and then there will be some that will be verified.
Okay.
And that just is a short process where we'll just make sure that they're up and running and they are a loco team. But
and
they won't
active.
They are active. They won't have to go through the reapproval stage or approval stage every 2 years.
So what's the reasoning behind that change?
A lot of people found it kind of disheartening if they weren't an approved team anymore. If they had gone through the approval process and, you know, 2 years later, if they come to the local council and shown that they possibly weren't as active as they were 2 years ago, or, you know, sometimes just people go through different phases of a team. It may not be running events, or it might be just activity on the mailing list. And certain people found that kind of disheartening. To hear they weren't an approved logo team. So it was just, I think it's just a word, it's a terminology. There still are logo teams, but sometimes a word can actually mean more than what it is to some people.
I guess so. I mean, it's useful to know what's, because there's nothing stopping anybody setting up a loco team. So we have a UK loco team, but somebody even within the UK could set up their own separate loco team if they wanted to, but it couldn't be a verified team.
Yeah, because currently, loco teams are countrywide in Europe, except for in the States. Again, this is something that we're actually working on to see if we can actually reduce that for the larger countries and make them into like provinces or states, just like the States is. And then have a city contact. This will all be displayed on loco.ubuntu.com, which is the website where you can see any loco team worldwide. And I think we have over 170 of them currently.
Right, wow. Okay, well, that's good. It's nice to hear that there's developments in that regard. Hopefully to make things a bit easier for people. What's the next story, Andy?
The next story is that they have announced now that the Ubuntu SDK, which is the single SDK, which is going to be the one targeting all devices, including the phones and tablets, is hopefully going to be ready by October time. So around about the time that Saucy Salamander, I've got it right, haven't I? The next version of Ubuntu comes out.
13.10. Bless you, Laura.
So the idea here is that this is going to be an all-in-one SDK, which lets you write Qt applications with QML as the markup language for the user interface, and then okay. will seamlessly scale to any kind of device and look amazing.
So this isn't just for the mobile apps, the phones, this is tablets and potentially proper big PCs as well?
I mean, that's what I understood from the interview a couple of episodes ago, right?
I remember it well.
I remember it well as well. I remember listening to it. So there's going to be this way of approaching app development targeting the Ubuntu platform. So the beta version of the SDK is due for release in July, and there's going to be some new widgets in there, so things like menus for sharing content with social networks and text search boxes and lots of other nice bits and pieces. And then by October, hopefully, it will be baked so that people can start to build their cool apps for for all the platforms, but also the Ubuntu Touch platform.
Excellent stuff.
Shall we have some events then?
Yes. Tell us about events, Laura.
So first up, we've got Random Hacks of Kindness in Southampton on the 1st and 2nd of June.
Okay. So this is the kind of socially aware. We interviewed Dirk Gorrison from the
we
project
did.
Earlier this season, I think, or maybe the end of last season.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of socially aware hackathon where you get together and make something that will hopefully make the world slightly better for people in a kind way. So, 1st and 2nd of June in Southampton.
And we've got OrgCon on the 8th of June, and it will include some discussion about the Snoopers Charter and the right to be offensive online.
So that's the Open Rights Group conference.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
A worthwhile talk. Now, the next thing is called something called Hack and Talk. I don't know. Is there anybody who could tell us about what that might involve?
So that's my little conference that I've kind of set up here in the UK. Rather than going to an event once a year, I'm trying to actually run an event every 3 to 4 months, a small unconference style of event. I ran one in March and I'm running another one in June. And it's just a case where people can come along, give a short talk or demonstrate something that they're working on. There's loads of space to actually work on projects. It's in the Google campus in London. We had about 40 people the last time in March, and we had varying topics from how you document a free and open source event to education and how to use open source in education. It's not Ubuntu related, it's non-distro specific, it's non-language specific, so it is open to anybody, and it would encourage people to actually come along. It is limited to 70 people, that's the only thing, just for space and to make sure everybody has enough space to actually sprawl out and work on their projects if needed.
Brilliant. And this is the second one that you've done?
It's the second one. I just came up with the idea just to have an event that reoccurs. And at the same time, if you want to learn about something and you're reading a blog post, it may not be clear. But if you see somebody demonstrate an application or a tool, then people will actually get more involved. And I know Alan Bell actually helped a user just hands-on how to use the HUD, which was quite... which was the idea of the whole thing, is that if people can see people using the same tool that they read about, they actually will get more involved.
Cool. And that's the 29th of June.
Yeah.
Okay. And Young Rewired State.
Yes.
Andy, you want to tell us about
this? Yes, I took part in Young Rewired State last year.
That's easy for you to say.
It is. Now, that happens in the middle of the summer holidays for children. So it's aimed at young people, I believe aged between 8 and 18. And it happens across the UK. They spend a week, or Monday to Thursday, working in centres around the UK with both people in the IT industry, the computer industry, and others who are prepared to mentor them and work with them. And the idea is that they get to hack on open data, which is government and other data,
cool,
and build prototype websites and cool apps. And then on the Friday, everybody goes converges on Birmingham and stays overnight. And then they show on Saturday and Sunday, they show their apps and get judged and stuff. So it's a really nice way for young people to learn about technology. It's not just open source. You can choose what platform you want to use.
Mm.
But it's a really good event to get involved in. And if you've got youngsters in that age group, then there's lots of information on youngrewiredstate.org.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for that, Andy. Well, that's all for this episode. And join us next time when we'll be interviewing one Mr. Sean Tilley from Diaspora, reading your feedback and making your life a bit easier with some, what actually is going to be a webby love, not a command line love, a webby love.
Ooh.
Well, thank you very much indeed for coming along, Andy and Laura. Do you fancy coming along for the next episode?
Why not? That sounds like fun.
I think
Mark and Alan will still be wandering around somewhere. So,
Do I have to grow my hair like Mark?
Yes, you've got 1 week.
Okay.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.